The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, everybody. It's me, Ryan Wilson, filling in for Will Brinson, who is out this week. But All 32 continues as we talk about every team in the NFL. Today, it's my guy, John Ledyard, talking about the Bucks. You can follow John at Ledyard NFL Draft on Twitter. He's at Pewter Report. He's not in Florida yet. He's in an undisclosed location in Central PA, but doing good, actually. John, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Ryan. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I've known you for a few years. Basically, when I started covering the draft, you were one of the first guys I turned to because you crush it. And I'm glad to see you're still covering Thank the NFL in the draft. And we also share, I just found out you're a Duke fan, which is a huge problem for me, but we're Steelers homers and you're a huge Steelers guy too. So that's also something we have in common. Give me your 15-second take on what the 2020 Steelers are going to look like, just for my own edification.
I think it's exciting. I mean, I think they're a little bit older, so the window's really short. But I think getting Ben back with a bunch of good receivers and an offensive line that should bounce back, plus that defense, it's got to be trouble. Now the AFC North is tougher than it usually is, but it still looks pretty solid.
Yeah, so you go from the Steelers, which is your team and my team, and, you know, we – watch those games with a critical eye. I will say your eye is much more critical than mine. If you want to look, if you're a Steelers fan and you're all about things, you know, being perfect, do not read John on Sundays on Twitter.
Because you always get on me for this. I feel like if people think I'm probably like the most negative Steelers.
You're not. You're not.
The most negative. I am sometimes, but
but you are critical of the Steelers. I'll give you that. So with that said, I think this is a things could not have gone better for you in terms of. Hey, we need you to cover the Bucks.
Yeah.
10 minutes later, the Bucks just signed Tom Brady. A month later, Rob Gronkowski coming to Tampa Bay. So tell me about, so what are the expectations from you personally? We know that Tom Brady is Tom Brady. He struggled last year and you can make, plenty of reasons why, starting with that supporting cast wide receiver. So what do you expect to happen in Tampa Bay in an offense where Bruce Arians is much more of a player's coach compared to Bill Belichick, and that doesn't have to be a bad thing, and throwing to a bunch of superstar wide receivers?
Yeah, Bruce is interesting. The fit between Bruce and Brady is where most people have kind of centered the analysis of everything that's happened in the Bucs offseason. You know, if there's any doubters, it's how will that kind of unfold, I think, for most people that are kind of educated about the situation. And that's a valid question because there is some differences. But at the same time, I do think some of it's overblown. You know, one of the things that's said about Brady really is that he doesn't throw the football down the field anymore and he can't throw the football down the field anymore. Well, he threw it down the field about league average last year, and that was on a team without any deep threat, any vertical threat at all. So he's still throwing the football down the field at a completely normal rate compared to other quarterbacks around the league. Hasn't really even fallen off in that area. You know, it's just – in regards to the personnel that they had, maybe they didn't do it quite as much last year, but he's still like league average, even in an offense without much of a vertical threat, like I said. So he's throwing down the field at a fine rate, and he's actually completing passes at a fine rate. He completed passes over 20 yards or more at a higher rate than Jameis Winston did last year. And so he was around 40-some percent. Brady was in the 41 to 42% range on 20 yards or more throws last season. This isn't adjusted. This is just raw accuracy numbers. And Jameis was like around 37%. So Jameis might do it all the time because that's his style. But Brady is not hesitant. He's never been hesitant quarterback. He's never been gun-shy quarterback. That's never been the case with Brady. Even good quarterbacks have sometimes deserved that moniker of being a little gun-shy in those moments, and that's never been said about Brady. So you do not have a quarterback that lacks aggression, and Bruce Arians' offense really needs an aggressive quarterback. That's the number one thing, I think. In terms of mentality, I don't think it's about having this cannon for an arm. It's about being aggressive and knowing when to take those chances. He's certainly had some quarterbacks that didn't mind putting the ball in harm's way over the course of his career. There's no doubt about that. Brady, I think his arm in terms of velocity is just fine. If you watch last season, you know, it's just something that people always start saying about older quarterbacks if they have a down year. They just say, their arms weak, because it's something most fans can understand. Like, we can understand an arm not looking that strong. We can't break down why a thing may have happened in those moments. And I, so I understand it. I get why fans say it, but it's just not true. If you watch his tape, you know, and I went back and watched, his arm is totally fine. I don't even think, and most quarterback experts and quarterback coaches will tell you, arm strength doesn't really get worse with age. That's not really how it works. Everybody points to Peyton Manning, but remember, his neck was like all messed up, and that was the reason that his arm eventually got shot and his throwing motion eventually was shot. So I think that Brady is fine physically. What last year was the problem at times was that he started to rush things and play really frustrated, I thought, down the second half of the season. I think he was frustrated with the offense, frustrated with the receivers not being on the same page. I know he was frustrated with the receivers. I know internally there was some of that frustration. So I think that that was the biggest thing. And I think being able to reset, even if he wasn't in Tampa with all that talent, just being able to reset will be huge for Brady. I think you're going to see him bounce back for sure, and have a really nice season. You know, will it be nice enough in that division with the Saints? We'll see. But I think he's definitely going to be destined for really good things in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that feels like the consensus. And like, you know this, like you start doing mock drafts or mock draft season. I was doing one a week from the fall, so I think I ended up doing 35. And like the last 10, what you sort of figured out after free agency is that it's without a doubt the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have to get an offensive lineman in the middle of the first round.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't have to trade up and blow a bunch of picks, which they were able to do. They took one spot. I think they get up the fourth or fifth round, or I can't remember which. Mm-hmm. Come back in the second round, maybe address the defense or even get a wide receiver. And then in the third round, maybe a running back or something like that. I was hoping they would get Van Jefferson. He felt like he would be a Tom Brady guy to catch 80 balls. Tyler Johnson isn't a bad consolation prize, the rookie out of Minnesota. I know there were mixed opinions on him coming out, especially when he played alongside Rashad Bateman. What are your expectations for Tyler Johnson, the rookie who plays out of the slot? He's a bigger guy, maybe didn't run particularly well. We really don't know because he never ran. But along with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and all those tight ends, does Tyler Johnson as a slot guy have a chance to have success maybe at some point down the line like we saw with Julian Edelman or Wes Welker or whoever else was in the slot for Tom Brady?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think you're right about Van Jefferson, by the way. He would have been a good fit as well, and Tyler Johnson is sort of a similar mold, maybe not quite as athletic or fast as Van Jefferson, but maybe a little bit better in contested catch situations. You know, for not being a fast guy, Tyler Johnson won down the field vertically in high degree of difficulty situations better than any receiver in college football. That's crazy. When you look at his numbers, how many contested catches he has, I mean, he's this lanky guy. You don't look at him and think like big, physically imposing contested catch receiver. You know, if you were to high-end comp him, which I don't think he is this player, and I don't know if he'll become this player, but high-end comp stylistically might be someone like Stephon Diggs, not like this unbelievable testing athlete, and you wouldn't ever think of them, like looking at them as a great contested catch receiver, but check Stephon Diggs' contested catch numbers every single year he's in the league. He's one of the best receivers. I think for PFF, he was their highest rated contested catch receiver 2 years in a row before this past season. So I think Tyler Johnson has to get on Diggs' level as a route runner, and that's where he's not at right now. If he ever wants to reach that ceiling, I think he's a good route runner, but Diggs is a great route runner, and I think that if he wants to get on that level, he's got to be there. And the other thing about Tyler Johnson that's interesting is a lot of his production, he played outside and inside at Minnesota, and a lot of his production came on the inside, and a lot of his more translatable catches where you saw a lot of separation and he can win this way type of reps were on the inside as a slot receiver. Now, the Bucs had Chris Godwin play a lot in the slot last year, 500-some snaps, but he still had 300-some outside. They move him around a ton. The Bucs love to reduce splits for the receivers and use stacked releases and create two-way goes. Bruce Arians is great at creating two-way goes for his receivers. That's one of the reasons why receivers are so good under Arians, is he makes it harder for DBs to defend them with the way that he lines up his receivers pre-snap. So I think he's in a great spot, not just because of the Brady thing. I think everybody caught on to that, and that's certainly true, but Bruce Arians is going to figure out how to maximize Tyler Johnson as well. The sticky part for Tyler Johnson is twofold. One is that Scotty Miller really impressed last year when he got to play late in the season. Thought he showed some really good things. Just 13 catches, but he made some big plays. He was just robbed of a couple touchdowns last year. He could have had three touchdowns on like 13, 14 catches, if not for a few little things that went wrong. So I think he has the speed too. 4.36 guy. He has the speed they want to maybe put on the field that opens things up. for other guys underneath. They want guys that can attract some attention vertically. And I think Scotty Miller does that, and Tyler Johnson maybe doesn't as much. So that would be one thing. He has to compete with Scotty Miller, and I think to a degree, Justin Watson, to get that job. So that's going to be one thing to watch for. The other thing is the Bucs might use 12 personnel a lot this season, two tight end sets, and that's going to mean two wide receivers on the field and a running back. And so you're going to have just two wide receivers out there, and those obviously will be Godwin and Evans if everyone's healthy. So those things might combine to limit his impact a little bit. But I think he is going to pick up snaps as the year goes on, and I think eventually you'll see him make some big plays for this team.
So you mentioned two tight end sets. That brings us to Rob Gronkowski. So he's healthy, took a year off. He lost some weight while he was away from football. He said he doesn't expect to have any trouble getting it back on. He looked pretty good in the uniform releases, like he looked like the old Rob Gronkowski. Mm-hmm. Realistically, what kind of Rob Gronkowski can we expect to see? Is this going to be more the 2018 version who, by the end of things, was just a glorified blocker, or is he going to be – anything close to the dominant Rob Gronkowski we saw in his prime?
Yeah, the funny thing about Gronkowski, and obviously there's such an unknown that I can't tell you for sure what he'll be. You know, I'd love to be able to say for sure, but after a year off, and you're right, injuries were taking a toll toward the end of 2018. But even some of his plays in 2018 were just bomb. I mean, he made this catch against the Jets where he's going down the seam and the guy can't get over top and the safety's trying to close and he hammers him as the ball gets there. And Gronk's like full extension catch in the front of the end zone. I mean, he did things even in 2018 that where you were just like, man, this guy's incredible. Like, you know, and I know the injuries eventually stacked up a little bit and derailed things. Plus the offense was slipping, I think, a little bit too. I don't think it was quite as dynamic in terms of a vertical attack as it's been in the past. And that's always where he's really thrived the most. So, but I think in answer to your question, the reason why I'd have a lot of hope in Gronkowski is twofold. One, we really have not seen Rob Gronkowski on an NFL field during his career where he has not been one of the best players in the league at his position. You could argue maybe the end of 2018, but you're talking about a very small, I mean, compared to the amount of games, I mean, he's been dominant at his position since he entered the league, and really that has not stopped except when he's been hurt. That's really been the only thing, when he's not in the game or when he's barely able to play in games because he's hurt. So right now he's healthy. So if he's on the field, I don't think the guy forgets how to play football. I don't think he's lost his athleticism. You know, he was never a guy reliant on that anyway. I mean, he won in so many other ways. And so I think you're still going to see a very productive player. The other reason is people think Bruce Arians doesn't like to use tight ends. I think that could not be further from the truth. The Bucs were actually eighth in the NFL last year by Warren Sharp's football stats. They were eighth in the NFL in 12 personnel last year in two tight end sets. So they already, without, you know, with Cameron Brate and OJ Howard, who were certainly, you know, solid tight ends, but even when Howard was hurt at times, Anthony O'Clair was in the game a lot, played heavy snaps. He loves to run 12 personnel. One of the reasons is a ton of shot plays come out of 12 personnel, because defenses are in a little bit of a heavier personnel package. They move a safety up maybe to cover tight end. So you've got playing with single high looks, and that's when teams like to take shots. Bruce Arians loves to take shots. So I think that difference is going to be, not only will Gronkowski get looks in those regards, but I think Mike Evans is going to be the recipient of some big shots because of 12 personnel. Mike Evans does more of his work in the vertical portion of the passing game, 10 yards and beyond, than any other actually stud receiver in the NFL. There's some guys here and there that flash, but Mike Evans, the volume of his receptions that come beyond that point is huge compared to basically every other high profile receiver in the league. So it's going to open up options for Mike Evans having that dominant 12 personnel package. So I think there's going to be multiple players that benefit from it, but certainly I expect Gronkowski and Brady to rediscover some level of connection. It might not be their peak connection, but it's going to be good enough to certainly threaten defenses.
No, I'm with you. I'm looking forward to that too. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Talk more Bucks. John Ledyard.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
All right, John, we talked about the offense there, and we may circle back to hit on some of these younger guys in a second. But I want to talk to you about the defense, which honestly not a lot of people were talking about last year. I think that five of their first six or six of the first seven draft picks in 2019 were on the defensive side of the ball, and it showed up. According to Football Outsiders, Tampa Bay finished 2019 season fifth in defense. They were 12th against the pass, number one against the run. What are your expectations for this group that's young, that's pretty athletic, and seems to be all over the place and much better than they were just a few years ago?
Yeah, the biggest difference last year was two things. One, the pass rush finally arrived. They hadn't had a pass rush in Tampa Bay in forever. I mean, we were thinking about the days of Simeon Rice and guys like that. I mean, they just did not have a pass rush. All of a sudden, Shaq Barrett comes out of nowhere as a one-year, $4 million deal free agent, goes off, leads the league in sacks, Ryan. You know how hard it is to lead the league in today's NFL in sacks with how many good edge rushers there are. I'm not saying he's the best or even belongs in tier one with some of those guys.
It looked like
last year, he had a special season last year.
That
was fun. And so I think that, you know, he's a big part of that. And also the character that of those guys on the D-line. I mean, Ndamukong Suh coming in and Jason Pierre-Paul coming in, veteran leaders in an otherwise really young group, but also competitors, guys that have went their whole careers playing huge snap numbers. I mean, Pierre-Paul missed the first eight games last year, obviously after the car accident, but you know, he's a guy that's played like his last two full seasons, like 89 and 92% snaps for a defensive end. I mean, those are bonkers numbers. And Sue is up there in her 80% snaps, and they'll need those guys to play a lot this year. And I think it's risky because they are aging and that, you know, Paul's been banged up and Sue's fallen off a little bit, but you know, having those kind of leaders that set the tone and brought a physicality, the Bucs had been a soft defense under Mike Smith for years, and those guys brought a physicality, a culture change. That all clicked in about midseason, and the Bucs were a different defense. And the other thing was the young corner group. You know, they got MJ Stewart out of there. They benched him. They cut Vernon Hargraves, I think week 11 or 12 or something like that. And sort of the home stretch of the season, I mean, it was the young guys. It was second year guy Carlton Davis, and it was the rookies, Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy Bunting. And those guys played pretty well for youngsters. You know, I mean, they're going to give some stuff up, but I think that, you know, for not having great safety play behind them, they really did some good things. Jamel Dean had an unbelievable finish to the season, after getting shredded in that Seahawks game. He really closed out strong last five or six games. So I think the arrow is pointing up, but they got to get the safety play fixed. There's no doubt about that. Antoine Winfield was a big pick, just because we don't know what's going to happen with Justin Evans. You know, if Evans were to be back and Winfield were to be healthy, and, you know, I think that safety room is really good. But without Evans last year, you know, and without him really for the last year and a half, they have floundered at that position. Andrew Adams is kind of just a stopgap guy. And you know, Whitehead and Edwards both struggled last year, so you hope that they can make up some ground. But right now, that's the position that's the biggest question mark. That and the young corners, can they take the next step? But the front seven looks good, and I think the arrow's pointing up for the group. Obviously a great defensive coordinator. So, you know, if you're going to say there's a question mark on the team, it's probably the secondary, but I think the talent is there. It's just about how quickly can they put it all together, because the window is, you know, 1 or 2 years probably for a Super Bowl.
It's pretty easy to get excited about this Buccaneers team based on just our conversations. And you look at the roster and hear all the things that happen. Jameis isn't there. He's now in New Orleans. And, you know, everyone knows he threw 30 interceptions last year. You'd imagine some of those interceptions could have been the difference between losing and winning. And the Bucs went 7-9 last year. Vegas has the win total at 9.5 right now. That feels about right, but you don't imagine the Tom Brady team just winning 9 games. Mm-hmm. What's the ceiling and the floor in your mind for how good or how bad this team may end up being, given all the things we just talked about?
You know, you said it at the outset. All right. I'm a Steelers guy that is pretty critical about the Steelers still. Like, I'm a fan, but I think I put aside the bias to cover the team because I know what they could have been probably in this last window if they handled some things a little bit better. And I wasn't afraid to kind of say, like, these are the weaknesses. Like, these are the areas that aren't good enough. And so, like, here's why I don't maybe share the optimism that some fans do coming into the season. And fortunately, the last 2 years, you know, last year was obviously an aberration, but the year before I was kind of right about those things, but I was honest about them at the outset, knowing that it wasn't maybe the most popular thing to say. It's kind of the opposite with the Bucs for me. Like right now, like I look at this team and I came in, Ryan, and I started early February. I knew some about the Bucs, but I wasn't thinking of them as a title contender. Obviously Brady and Gronkowski help a lot, but when I looked at the roster as a whole, and I was like, okay, there's still some weeks. Then I started watching tape of the team, and I've studied, like, this point, you know, we're almost, you know, we're in late into June here in the summer, and I've studied this point most of their season last year. there's a lot of good players on this team. I mean, Vita Vea is a good player. Devin White is on his way. Second half of last year was really good for him and for the secondary. Levante David is a star. I mean, I'm not talking about a good player that's underrated. I'm talking about a star that has been to one Pro Bowl. That's a crime. And that should not, I watched this tape. I watched almost every game from last year. He is unbelievable. He's an unbelievable football player. So I say all that to say this is a team that is clearly, in my mind, on paper, one of the best five or six in the league. Now, this is a weird season, right? Like COVID, how much will it allow them to gel as a team? What will training camp look like? How often will players get sick? How affected will they be? You know, I just, there's all that disclaimer. So let's put all that aside and just say, okay, we don't know like about all this. But if the Bucs stay healthy relative to the rest of the league, I think the worst that I could see them possibly doing is 10-6. I'm just being honest. Like I think they could be 12-4. Their schedule really isn't that hard. I know they play the Saints twice, but the Falcons and the Panthers don't look like they're going to be competitors this year. They certainly aren't on the Bucs level talent wise. I don't think the schedule is tough enough for me to really say this is a team that will struggle to make the playoffs. To me, it would have to be a major injury. They're just too good in too many different places, for me to see that being an outcome that's certainly acceptable. You know, if they were to miss the playoffs, especially with the seventh team being added this year, I think that would be a disaster for the Bucs. I don't see that happening. I think this is a focus group. I think Brady is going to be so motivated, and having Gronkowski there is going to help so much. And I just think this is a team that is going to be one of the best in the NFL this season. I really think they're headed for that. I know it's crazy to say about the Bucs, but I really think they're headed for that kind of a season.
I believe what you're saying. The only issue is I've never seen you optimistic talking about a football team. I don't know what to make
of it. Listen, what about the Senior Bowl teams, the East, West? I'm kind of optimistic about the players on those teams. Maybe give me that.
Hey, John, I thank you so much for your time, man. You can read John's stuff online at Pewter Report. You can follow him on Twitter at Ledyard NFL Draft. He is one of the best draft analysts on the inner tubes, and I'm not even joking because he's here. He's really good, and he'll tell you exactly what he thinks, and you may not like it, but that's actually sort of the good thing about it. Dude, good luck with Florida when you get there. Great job as always. Great talking to you, man, and let's talk soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Ryan, and thanks for the kind words. Always awesome talking football with you. Hope to see you and talk to you again soon.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not Linda got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching, these have been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.